Hey guys, so in this section, we're actually looking into running this SQL script into our Azure database, as well as stepping through the PHP code and trying to understand what's going on beneath the hood. So I'll be using MySQL Workbench as the tool to actually execute this script. You're free to use any other tool of your choice. Once you actually search this up and download and install, you'll be prompted by this screen. So what we need to do is we need to actually connect to the database. And you'd see that we need some credentials for this. So if you remember, we actually went to our Azure portal and we have our database properties here. So properties right here. And we can actually copy over the host names and other credentials into this. So let's just do that now. So host name, username right here, and password. Again, these are sensitive information, so make sure you don't share it with anyone because they would then have access to your database and they could change whatever they want. So we just click on OK and it prompts us for the password, so we'll just save it in Vault as well. So it's again copied from here, and once we have to click OK, it should open up. So I can see your database should be empty at the moment, so you don't actually have any tables yet. And that's where this script we have earlier comes into play. So again, we had placeholder as a database name. You're able to change that. Again, instead of having to declare database name each time, you could instead do something like use, and then you have your database name there. But we'll just stick to this for now. So let's just change all the instances of database name into this database. So again, your database name is not actually the name that you put in Azure here. It's instead the name that they auto-generated over here. So if you actually go to your connection string, you see here, database equals. So this is what you actually want to put into your database name. So what we'll do, just a really quick fix, is to actually control H and replace all the instances of that. So we'll just do that now. And we'll replace it with that. So just replace all. And this script should now be ready to actually be executed on our Azure database. So let's just copy all this and go back here. You see that it has a query here. So we'll just paste all this and run it. So as you can see, it's creating all the tables and it's actually inserting all the data that we need into the database. So we'll just wait for that to be completed. It should not take too long. There's not too much data. So once that's done, we should actually now be able to see our tables. So if you right click on this and hit on refresh all and actually look into the tables section, we'll see that we have now three tables here: links, ingredients, recipes. So just like what the schema showed earlier on. So if we just do a simple search on one of the tables here, so it selects all the columns and shows us all the data, we see that there are about 10 recipes here with different types. So you have desserts as well as main. So we'll use this sort of process to actually display this on our website, but instead of using MySQL Workbench, we'll be using PHP code. So now let's actually see how we could do this using PHP. If you go to the example website, yourlist.azurewebsites.net, you'll see that there's mostly two sections that we're concerned of, which is the input section here, as well as the output section here. So these two sections is where we actually have script tags for PHP running. So if you were to click on search, you'll see that the recipes come out in the form of a table, similar to how we did it in MySQL Workbench, except using PHP. So if we were to step through the code here, so just open your index.php file, you'd see that the input form here is right underneath the div class container. So let's just have a look at the form. So essentially we have two main types of input in our form. We have a drop-down list here, which can be made using the select class, as well as the more general input field here, which can be made by using input and specifying either the text field, number field, or a combination of others depending on what you want to do. So basically what this does is that it actually stores values that were put into these sections. So if you're using a drop-down field, you have the display here that will show the actual user. But in our code, this is the sort of value that will be sent back to us. They just happen to be the same here, and you can of course change this to whatever you want. So you could have it as true or false instead, as long as you know what you're looking for when you're actually parsing through the return values. And in the input field here for the text, we had just a general text. All of these sections, we have named them. So we have named this the select recipe name. So it's just easier for us to reference this back when we're going through the PHP code. So you have the select recipe name for more or less drop-down lists. And we specify the type here as well. So we have text recipe name for the sort of general input field here. We do the same for all the other sections as well. So for the recipe type as well, we have the select and also the text input. And for serves, we actually specify three option values in our drop-down list. You can have as many as you want. And for the actual more general input field, we specify it as a number instead of the more general text, which means we can actually put in a constraint for the minimum value that it can take. So if we were to actually go back to the field, you can't go below 1, which makes sense considering that we're trying to make recipe lists that can serve, you know, at least one person. So if we were to go back to the code, we would actually see that the placeholders for all these recipe names and whatnot, we can specify them right here. So the name you actually called the field is not what is displayed. It's actually the placeholder part. So you can specify a placeholder, which makes it nice and neat and more easily referenceable for people. Now we need a way for someone to actually submit the values that they've put inside these input fields. So we've made a button here with the type submit. So this type is important as it's what actually causes the form method to run. So the form method of post runs when that button has been either clicked, pressed, or entered. So if you actually look here, we named it submit form. You can of course leave this blank. If you do, it'll just assume that the name is submit. So we'll just leave it submit form. And this is what actually causes the form process to run. So all this method actions, it runs when that button is clicked. So if we actually have a look at the action, we see that the PHP script here echoes its own sort of value here. So this PHP echo underscore servers PHP self, what this basically means is that it checks this sort of global variable for its own sort of self-reference. So because this is under index.php, it'll return itself. So this will get replaced with index.php when the client-side browser is actually viewing it. So it says send all these values to index.php. So it'll be something like this. So index.php. This is what essentially it'll see. So now we're actually done with the input section of the website. So we had all these fields. So this was a drop-down list. This was a general input field, which was text, drop-down list, text, drop-down list. But this time we had this as a number, and we also had a minimum value of 1 that you cannot go below. And this button here, search, is the submit form button that would actually cause this whole form to execute the method that will post to itself. So this link here, so after the sort of like slash here, it will post all the values that were in these sort of input forms to this link here. So it will send to itself. Now let's actually see how this output section is made. If we go back to the index.php and we scroll over this time to the lower portion, so this is after the table has been created. So you see that there is a table heading, and in the table body is where we actually put our new PHP script tag as well. So it checks if submit form is set. So if you recall, this is a sort of like super global variable that checks what has been posted. So in our form, our method was post, so it sends all these variables into the sort of post super global variable. And if we look here, we actually look to see if submit form exists. So if you remember, our button was what was called submit form. So if you had a different button name is what you'd actually check here. So it checks if that button has been pressed, because if it pressed, there is some sort of value inside the submit form name. So it checks if submit form is set or if it has a non-null value. And from there, it will actually begin to run this entire script. So you should have already gone through the process of putting in your credentials into this. But in case you forgot, we actually go through the properties tab of your database in Azure. So you can just copy over your username here and your password here. Again, you don't generally want to give this information out because it's sensitive information that someone can then use to access your database and, of course, change things around, which may not be what you want. And don't forget that the database name here is actually this string here. So it's not the name that you've called it in Azure, it's the name that's in this sort of connection string. So you can put that in as well. Don't forget to actually go and put quotation marks around them. So just go and put it around here because they're all strings. Do that. And we should be able to actually connect into our database. So now if we actually go through the code, we see that we make a new connection using the MySQLi object. So make sure you use the MySQLi object if you're going to use the MySQL function. So also have a look at using PDOs and prepared statements, which will allow you to more or less reuse the same queries across different types of databases. But if you're to use MySQL, don't use the MySQL standard, use the MySQL I for improved, as that's generally more secure than the previous one. But of course, you still have to have good code practice. So after we've actually made our connection, we will check if there's actually been an error with it. So if there's no error with the actual connection, it'll just continue on. But if there's an error, it'll actually stop all this process. So it'll cut off the connection and it'll actually show what error happened. So some of the more common errors you might get is that there's too many connections to your database, or you can't really log into your database. So if, let's say, these values here are wrong, you might see that pop up. So this is mostly for the help for both you as an administrator, web admin, and for the users as well to kind of know what's up. Now, if we actually go through this, we now actually get all the input fields. You remember all those names we had mentioned? So text, recipe, cell, recipe. We actually put those in new variables here. So this is after we actually make sure that we don't get any sort of SQL injections happening. So MySQLi real escape string, what it does is it makes sure if they put, you know, commands that MySQL database might recognize in the actual input field, that we don't actually run those commands. We instead just get the string version of the commands. And in here, it basically converts those not or is into something that MySQL actually understands. So MySQL doesn't know what is or not means. It only knows this not like and like commands. So this form is actually a ternary. What it is just a more or less condensed version of an if-else statements. So basically what it checks is if this variable is equal to not, so it puts not like inside this variable name. So instead of the variable having is or not, it actually has something that MySQL can actually understand. So we have cell recipe name, which could either be not like or like, and we have recipe name here that will only have it as a sort of escape string. So even if they put stuff like drop tables or insert something into this field, it won't actually process that. So the same is done with all the other inputs. And for the serves, because the serves is actually a number, we use the intval function here. So intval checks if this is actually a number that can be converted, or if it is, then it converts it. Otherwise, it returns a 0 or a 1 depending on the sort of invalid case. So basically what we're doing here, we're saying that if when you convert this variable, if the value is greater than 0, then just return or put into that variable the same value that it was. Otherwise, it means that it's not a valid number, and it'll just put the default as 1. So even if they put something that's not really a number inside the serve section, what we'll do is that we'll just assume that they want at least 1, which is the minimum value in the recipes. So after that's done, let's just go into the query. So we can use a very simple way to do this. Instead of having them all concatenated using that dot equal you saw here, so like this dot that to join the strings, we can instead put the variables directly inside quotation marks. So this works if you use double quotes. If you use a single quote, it won't actually be processed. But if you use double quotes, it means that you can actually put the variables inside the query. Might be easier for you to structure out in this way so you know exactly what's happening. So this is kind of similar to what we did earlier in MySQL Workbench. So we're selecting all the actual columns, and then we go check in this serve like table. So the table is composed of recipes where the recipe name is, again, the sort of like is or like. So this is where the whole not like is replaced. So this gets changed to like or not like. What that means is that we're either trying to find a match or trying to find all the ones that don't match that exact specification. So if let's say we wanted to avoid beef or something, then we'll use not like, and then in here will be beef. So you see these percentage marks across the actual variable? It means that you can find anything similar to this. So it can either start with it or end with it or be somewhere in between. All will be valid cases because we're actually using this percentage marks. So you can see we actually put quotation marks around the strings. So recipe name, recipe type were all strings. But serves was actually a number, so you see it does not actually have strings around it. Remember to use a string that's different from this, otherwise you might have to resort to using the, you know, concatenation sort of method. And at the end, we order it by the recipe name and in some sort of ascending format. You can change this to descending, or you can order it by the number of serves, or you can even start grouping them as well. It's completely up to you. Now, how it actually displays the table rows is that in the first row, we actually have the number of results that happen. So if you look at the result object and check the number of rows, we can actually put that out. So we put it as a label that says results found and the number of rows before that. And if I actually go through that, there's a loop here that as long as we have some sort of row or value that needs to be output, we can then make a new table row for that. So each new recipe has its own table row where we go through the recipe name, recipe type, and serves. All of these sorts of recipe name, recipe type, serves, they're from the selected columns from this query here. So the query was run in this sort of connection query method, and it gave us this result object. And once you're done with this, don't forget to close the connection. So after the entire sort of PHP script has been run, the very end, make sure to actually close it. And once that's done, this is the sort of general implementation for this website. So you can see the results found. You can see each recipe is on one table row. And you can see that we actually got the recipe name, recipe type, and serves from it. These recipe name, recipe type, serves, they're in the table header. So this is not actually in the PHP script. It's only from this point downwards that the PHP script has been actually running and replacing them with the recipe values. And if we try again, this time let's try to put in a limit of 6, so at least 6, so we should not have any 4. Click on search. It will run the query and it'll make sure that we only have at least 6 serves in here. So that's where that query structure where we designed the sort of, let's have a look here. So that's where this actually works. So if you recall, for the cell serves, we changed the exact and the most into sort of commands that MySQL can understand. So either equals or less than or equal to. And if it's neither of these, we change it to greater than or equal to. So if we have a look again at the query, it's pretty much straightforward. It's mostly just one table that's being assessed. So if you remember the schema here, we're only looking at one of these tables. So if you want to get creative, you probably want to join the ingredients with the recipes. So each recipe would also show the ingredients that take to actually make that recipe. This is where the link table comes in. So that's probably what you'd want to do for your own website. And you might also want to spruce up the sort of colors a bit, make it a bit more vibrant or lively, and customize it to your own, you know, fitting. So if we actually go to another version of this website, so this is instead of your list, just types in my list, azurewebsites.net, and you'll see an alternative version to this. So as you can see, you actually can change it a bit more, make it a bit more lively. So now the actual table headers has the inputs. So instead of the inputs being in a separate section, they're actually in this table header. And we can actually do the same sort of functionality to this, except if we were to click search, we have a bit more to it. So we have all these other sections being called in as well. So it's not just looking at just one table, it's looking at all these other tables. So this is when you actually use your SQL sort of knowledge and actually use stuff like join, left join, or right join, and all these sorts of like variables to make sure that the recipe IDs links on to the recipe ID in the link table, and the ingredient ID links on to the ingredient ID in the link table. So once you actually play around with all this, this is the sort of possibilities you can make. And you can even go further than this. You can have it search not only the recipe name, but also make sure that it can search within the recipe ingredients themselves. So if you were, let's say, allergic to eggs, or you didn't want cheese, or you're only looking for things that had, let's say, milk, chocolate milk, you could have a sort of extra search here.